On Pilot TV this week, we're back undercover with Tom Hiddleston in the long-awaited second series of The Night Manager on BBC One, storming the US Embassy with Martin Comston in the second series of Red Eye on ITV, and trying to unravel yet another Harlan Coben mystery with Runaway on Netflix. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. But more than that, welcome to 2026. A very happy new year to you from all of us at Pilot TV, specifically Boyd Hilton and Kay Ribera, who are indeed with me today. And we wish you a very happy new year, despite the fact that we're actually recording this on the 15th of December, the week before.
What is going on?
The week before we record the Christmas episode of the podcast. Now, why, you might ask, are we doing that? Well, that is an excellent question. And if I'm honest with you, it is largely down to scheduling. But let's just pretend it's all part of our grand master publishing plan and leave it at that, shall we? Guys, how will your New Year's have been when people hear this?
I just can't even compute what's happening right now. The truth of it is, listeners, we're in the midst of a week. This is Monday of the week, and we're doing five records back to back. So I'm confused what day it is in record time. It's like, what is going on? Who am I? That's how I've been.
It's down to you absolute maniac, James. You scheduled this madness.
I don't know what you're talking about. See, Boydie, you should be very excited because I'm finally caving to your wishes. And you don't like us taking time off ever you know for what? Any circumstances.
But you know what? Absolutely. I am grateful that you finally paid attention to the fact that all the big shows start on New Year's Day, and in previous years we have not been able to review them. And we have this time, and that is an absolute triumph.
It's a Christmas miracle.
To be fair, it's a good shout. It's a good shout because they are mega shows that we're going to be reviewing. So.
It is true. And since we are not, well, I am not certainly, coming back to work until the 5th, we thought we'd get ahead of it. We watch all the New Year's shows ahead of time, and then we could put out a vastly informative, albeit 5 days late, show reviewing all the New Year's Day shows. So that's good.
What a service.
Because
what
they are service. They are anyway heavily embargoed until New Year's Day itself.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah. So
it's good. So we, even though it is the 15th of December, we have seen all of the New Year's Day shows. And we're going to get into those a little bit later on.
I don't know if you've seen all of them, James. Have you seen the Mrs. Brown Boys New Year's special?
Well, maybe I have, Boydie. Maybe I have enjoyed it. And it's been my show of the year. Who knows?
Oh, okay.
That's why he got the tattoo over the festive period.
That's right. You'll find that out in the review of the year 2026, which we'll do at the end of this year. And you can find out where Mrs. Brown's Boys, the TV show, fell on that. But look, we're going to get into their shows a little bit later on. Now, what we can't do is tell you what we've been watching. Because we don't know what we've been watching because we haven't watched them yet because it is currently the middle of December. And Kay has got her hand up because she's about to do some weird timey-wimey shit, I feel.
Yes, I am. I want to scramble your brains. Because I'm so diligent and I was like, oh, we won't have anything to talk about, I thought I would just mention a show that is in the new year that I have watched as a listener service.
See. Okay, so what you can do is you can break an embargo knowing that by the time this goes out, you won't be breaking an embargo. I see what you're doing.
Well, I can do the same thing as well,
Well, actually, I mean, I'm not going to break the embargo because I don't know if it will have passed by the time this episode comes out. However, I'm going to tell you that I watched the first episode of Hijack on Apple TV, which is coming out after this pod record comes out. And we've discussed it before, but basically, Idris, our best friend, is back. Sam Nelson is once again the most unlucky commuter in the world, and he finds himself in a spot of bother on a train in Berlin. And enough said. That's it. No embargoes broken or injured. No animals injured or embargoes broken during the record.
Also, we will be reviewing it, obviously, as soon as we can on the Pilot TV podcast. But yeah, I mean, that's similar to what I'm about to say, though, is genuinely confusing and embargo breaking. If we started talking about this thing right now on the whatever it is of December, I've just hot footed it from the cinema in Ladbroke Grove to see the new series of The Traitors and to host a Q&A with Claudia Winkleman about the first episode of the new series. So as it stands right now, I can't tell you two, even though by the time this comes out, like three episodes will have aired starting on New Year's Day of Series 4 of The Traitors.
Oh, give us a tidbit, Boyd. Come on.
But I will give you a tidbit, because you'd have to basically find a medium, a media medium, so to speak, to break this embargo of what I'm about to tell you, because it's going to be, it will have been revealed soon enough anyway. Do you know what I mean? You have to go out of
your
way to ruin
this.
So anyway, to cut a very long story short, have you seen the trailers for the new series of The Traitors? Okay, I won't ask you, James, because you don't watch.
No, I haven't. Thank you.
I appreciate you leaving me out of this.
Well, go on in the trailer for the new series of The Traitors that's been running for a few days, Claudia says something like, "And blah blah blah," and there's a twist. Blah, blah, blah. And you think, you know, the twist is going to be, I don't know, someone else is someone's relative. We've had, you know, it could be friends that know each other, there's loads of things it could be, which wouldn't be necessarily earth-shattering to the format. But in fact, the big twist is earth-shattering for the format. And let me just say this. It's a brilliant twist. It's really well thought through. And it impacts on the whole playing of the game.
Oh my God.
It's fascinating. And it's such a brilliant idea that they came up with. Just a little tweak, a key tweak.
I am desperate to know what it is.
So I'm going to tell you what it is now anyway. Because this is a spoiler. Because by the time this comes out, everyone's going to listen to this going, why hasn't he told them? Just told them yet. This is coming
I
out
feel
January
like by
5th.
The time we've discussed what the spoil, like what we can and can't talk about, it's 2027.
Well, exactly. So here we go. Right, are you ready? I'm about to spoil it for UK though. Right.
Yeah, come on,
James
tell
doesn't
me.
Matter, doesn't watch it, doesn't know what's going on. Basically, she picks three traitors, as usual, in the initial round table.
Yeah.
But she also picks a secret traitor at that same moment. So the secret there's a secret traitor twist
that the audience don't know about.
No, so we, the audience, don't know who the secret traitor is. We know who the three normal traitors are. The three normal traitors don't know who the secret traitor is otherwise, but the secret traitor has the ultimate power and tells the traitors which people that would be available for killing on any given time. And they're never
in the turret with the traitors.
No, they're not with the traitors. They're on their own in the turret. Lone wolf figure, secret figure. And it's brilliant because it means that Claudia knows who they are and the producers and directors and editors do, and they edit it. But as it stands right now, having watched the first episode, I'm like, who is it? Who the fuck is it? And it's going to play out as long as it takes for people to work it out, I guess. But it changes the whole thing. In a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because, 100%.
Yeah. So it's fascinating.
Do you know what? Congratulations. You haven't oversold that. That is a brilliant bloody twist.
Is this not an interesting return to the original format of this show, which wasn't it originally pitched as the audience wouldn't know who the traitors were? Because otherwise they were like, that's where the surprise would be. And then the genius move, they were saying, no. The audience needs to know because that's where the fun will be. So now they're splitting the difference.
Do you know what? You're absolutely right.
About the traitors.
Yeah. In the original conception of the show, you're right. There was a discussion.
So annoying.
There was a discussion in the original conception of the format. Should we be let in on who the traitors are? And as you say, they decided, we must be because they're bad. So this is a brilliant halfway between the two positions. And Claudia said, Claudia was talking about how she loves it particularly because, like, her dad watches it and goes, oh, how can they not realise so-and-so's a traitor? Well, now her dad is like me and the rest of us in the position of going, we don't know who the fuck the traitor is either. Claudia was saying to me, you know, who do you think it is? Who do you think it is? And I guessed, like, one person who I don't think it is. And she's like, oh, intriguing, yes, you know. She's like, so it's so much fun. It's so much fun, even just in that first episode.
Also, I imagine a lot of pressure on her not to give it away.
Huge pressure, but she's brilliant. She knows how to keep the secrets now. Yeah, she absolutely knows. And one more thing about Claudia, because I know you're a Strictly fan. They've just recorded the Christmas special, which is her last ever show, obviously, with Tess Daly. And she said it gets really, really emotional.
And this is the one that airs in Christmas 26.
No. This says Christmas Day. You do.
Okay, fine. I was going to say, because I like Christmas specials, famously, Christmas specials are shot way in advance of when they air.
Jonathan Ross was saying today that he filmed the Blankety Blank Christmas special that went out this Christmas.
Yeah. I've watched that.
In March.
Yeah.
What?
In March, yeah. And he totally forgot he made it because it was in March. And then he saw the BBC One trailers for Christmas. He's like, oh my God, when did I do that? And he's like, oh yeah, we recorded it in March.
What kind of crazy maniac makes you record something so way in advance, but when it's insane. Pretend it's a different time frame?
I see what's happening here.
I see what's happening. I'm slow on that.
Well, I'm still wearing my festive jumper. I should have changed into some kind of 2026 outfit.
So yeah, this is the what we will be watching section, which is a maverick new section that we've started doing.
Yeah. What we will have been watching, but we're not sure we can say.
What we will have been watching, but aren't necessarily watching yet. So, I mean, I haven't seen the last two episodes of Hijack, so they still haven't made those available. So, okay, I'm in the same boat as you in that regard. I have no idea what I will have been watching.
By the way, James, do you know why they haven't made them available yet?
Presumably there's some kind of twist.
No, that's not it at all. I was speaking to Jim Field Smith, the showrunner. It's purely because they haven't finished editing it yet.
It's such
a complex show to with all the effects and everything that it's been months and months and months in the edit room and all of that, and they just weren't ready.
What you're saying is Robert Frost needs to pull his finger out.
Yeah, Robert Frost, the editor.
Do you know what? Maybe he spent so much time dedicating to writing us that brilliant poem with you.
And he should have been editing.
Yeah, he had his priorities straight.
Yeah, it might be the VFX people as well, more than him, in fact.
All right, so Robert, we'll let you off this once.
Yeah.
okay, well, that was unexpected. I wasn't expecting us to do a what we might have been watching, will be watching section. Instead, what I was going to do is get us to talk about the things we are most looking forward to seeing in 2026. Because as with 2025, it's looking like a very good year for TV. I have no idea how we're going to do this. We could go through the calendar, but the thing with TV, unlike film, is they don't anchor the release date so far in advance. So a lot of these shows, we don't know when they're coming.
Go through the calendar. We can't do that, maniac.
Well, I have
be here forever.
I have prepared a chronological list of things that we know dates for, as well as other things that we do not know dates for, because I'm quite organized.
Well,
in this
you
regard.
Just go ahead, mate. Okay.
All right.
I've got some stuff in January and March I know about, and then some just general floating ones.
Okay, floating ones. Well, okay. Yeah. Should we take turns then? Who wants to start? Okay. Shall I start with a few, and then we'll go on.
Since I prepared,
and obviously Kay will obviously want to bring up Starfleet Academy, which airs on the 15th of January on Paramount Plus. But on the off chance that she maybe doesn't want to, that's the first show that I'm curious about, because I don't really know what it's going to be. It's got Paul Giamatti in it, which is very, very exciting. It's and a sort of young cast of sort of recruits. They've been trying to get this show made for such a long time, and any new Star Trek is cause for celebration with me. So
if you don't know what it's about, then who the fuck else is going to know?
I mean, I know vaguely what it's about, but it's more just like, what tone will it strike? Will it be a bit YA? Like, how will it? Because they've been trying to make a Starfleet Academy show for so long. So I've seen the trailer.
Like a youth Star Trek, is that what it is?
Well, it's certainly got a youth cast, yes. So I don't know quite tonally where it will fall, or
baby
from a
Star
subject
Trek.
Matter where it will fall.
What
it could
proposition?
Be baby Star Trek, yes. But I'm curious to see that one. Obviously, I've seen A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is the new Game of Thrones spin-off, which airs on Sky on the 19th of January, which is based on George R. R. Martin's Hedge Knight novellas, which are a lot of fun. It's like there was a news story recently saying that it's Game of Thrones for kids. It is very much not Game of Thrones for kids. But it has a lighter tone, and it's less, you know...
There's less
sex and violence. There's action in it, don't get me wrong, but I suppose it's slightly less, you know, incesty than Game of Thrones was.
Good to know.
So, you know, there's that. 27th of Jan, I think, is Wonder Man, which is the new MCU show on Disney Plus, which is very meta. That's one's got Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as Wonder Man, who is a superhero who wants to play the character of a superhero on screen. It's very meta. It looks a bit weird. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. It's another one where I'm a little bit, what's this going to be?
James, I'm out.
You're out. Right. Kay's out from that.
But I'm in because I'm jumping in for the 28th of January when my beloved Shrinking returns to Apple TV.
Oh, is that the 28th?
Yeah, series 3.
That does technically give me time to catch up if I were of a mind to.
James, do it.
I might
make 2026
it's on the list. It's on the list. Oh, maybe I should do, and then I'll get really excited about it in time for it to come back.
How about you make this oath that you will not rewatch anything till you watch Shrinking, right? Because that's just not fair. Rewatching stuff. Yeah,
that's a very, very
make a commitment to the listeners stuck by us, who leave us reviews, who deal with our bullshit, and just say you won't rewatch anything until you've fulfilled my request.
I do think that I should give up on what I have been watching, but a little bit. So I've been watching. Did you either of you guys finish the most recent series of Trigger Point?
Watch the first episode. By the way, can I just say what an response you just gave without answering the question? And just
You've done a complete switcheroo because you ditched what we've been watching, and but Tay and I did that out of emotion. And then you went on to what you've been watching, and you've gone back to a traditional what you've been watching. It's really
all in a bid to not promise to watch Shrinking. That's what you did.
You got yourself
in a conversational cul-de-sac broke all the rules.
I tried to 3-point turn my way out of that particular commitment and failed miserably.
Yeah, you really have.
Doofus.
Sorry.
Anyway, go on. Yeah, no, okay. I didn't finish Trigger Point.
Yeah, well, I've been watching that.
Oh, okay, well, stop watching that and get on with the more important subject of Shrinking.
Noted.
29th, you're probably going to mention this, but Bridgerton.
I wasn't, but
season 4A. Yeah, you know, I'm always excited for a new Bridgerton just to see which sibling they'll be focusing on. So looking forward to seeing that.
Okay. Oh, also, Kate, bear in mind, The Night Agent returns for its third season on Netflix on 19th of February, featuring hottie Night Agent himself.
Not to be confused with The Night Manager. Right, The Night Agent is the... Yeah,
not to be confused with The Night Manager, yes.
Of all the things I regret saying on this podcast, saying that I might... I had a brief,
flirtation.
Fancying of this guy. Yeah, exactly, is one of them, because... It's not a great show. He's not that hot.
You're reversing on the thirst trap that is The Night Agent.
Yeah, and I reversed pretty soon after we said it.
Too late.
It's become an ongoing joke.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, also bolted on that one, sorry.
When does it return?
That returns on the 19th of February. On the 11th of February, Dadcore Prime brings us Cross Season 2, based on the Alex Cross novels by James Patterson. So that comes back, which is good. Paradise, Boydie. Paradise returns also in Feb for its second season on Disney+. And if you've seen the trailer of that, it has Sterling K. Brown, because obviously he's left the, I don't know what we want to call it, the town, the subterranean town, spoiler for Paradise, and he now heads out into the into the wider world. So I think it's going to have a different canvas the second season.
You did a kind of my style of spoiler there, where you said it and then afterwards you said spoiler.
Yeah, but tongue-in-cheek. It's tongue-in-cheek. Yeah.
Maybe this is his New Year's resolution to turn into Boyd.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all in the trailer, but also kind of, if you don't know the conceit of the show by this point, I think, unfortunately, you're a bit screwed.
Okay. Wait for the emails.
Monica's getting a second season. Yeah. Daredevil Born Again returns for its second season. It's almost like the second half of this first season, really, if we are honest. But yes, but the second season of Daredevil Born Again lands in March, I believe.
Ooh, March, 11th of March, I've got Scarpetta, which is on Prime
Nicole
Video.
Kidman.
Yeah, and Jamie Lee Curtis, which is based on the Patricia Cornwell book. So I'm excited to see, not least because she's called Kay, character.
Well, she is. Well, haven't there been... So it's this... So on paper, this feels a bit Rosalian Isles, you know, which is the Kathy Wright adaptation, a similar sort of like forensic, you know, female forensic psychologist, or forensic scientist, I should say. But it could easily be the kind of show where you think, oh, this is just another kind of procedural. It's going to be on you and Alibi, and you know, but just having Nicole Kidman in it and Jamie Lee Curtis, yeah, exactly that. It instantly makes you interested. So yes, I think this is going to be good. Excited about Scarpetta. 11th of March, then, that on Prime.
Yes. I've got some floating ones. Do you want them now or?
Oh, float away.
Float away. So, the other things that I'm excited about this year, we have The Bear, season 5, whenever that shall be.
Oh, is that locked in? Is it definitely coming next year? Interesting.
In my mind, very much.
Kay says it is. So it is.
The Comeback, series 3.
Yes, that's coming in March. We know that's coming back, and it's going to be her in the first AI sitcom.
Cannot wait. And then this is another one that's not technically locked in, but if I rule the world, which is obviously
which
what we both
very nearly
dream
do
of,
yes,
yeah. Black Doves, come on, this has to be the year we get Black Doves.
Joe mate, I don't know what you've been doing this merinium, but if it hasn't been finishing the second season of Black Doves, we need to have words.
You're just assuming there that it'll be arriving this year, which is a bold one to
I like to be bold.
If you said to me right now, when do you think Black Dove Season 2 will arrive on the Netflix? I would say New Year's Day 2027. That'd be
my
guess.
How about we have a wager?
Okay.
Let's make this interesting.
Yeah.
What can we wager? I'm going to say... when Boyd and I have a bet, we usually do a nugget, a golden nugget. I'm going to say £10.
I'm going to say the wager is this. Boydie has laid his reputation on the line saying that it will be New Year's Day 2027. If he is correct, we do something nice for him. If he is incorrect, the next time Arsenal play Spurs, he has to sit in the Spurs section.
Ooh, Jay, that's a good one.
With Joe Barton.
I mean,
sadly, oh, yes. Fantastic.
Can I just say that of the three of us, only me and Joe Barton would know that you can't just plop yourself in the middle of the away end willy-nilly. These things.
No, you'd wear a shirt.
You'd have to wear a Spurs shirt.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, you can't just get tickets. But
Joe could hook you up. I have no doubt.
Jay, listen. He wrote Black Doves. He can sort you out a ticket. It's all good. I can't wait for that. That's a great bet.
Yeah, you have to wear a blue scarf.
Yeah,
agree?
Right. I mean, I can pretend I agree.
Let's make it easier. All right, £10. We'll just do £10. That's it. Okay, fine. Sure. I'm saying this year, you're saying 1st of Jan.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Fine. It won't even touch Boyd's billion, so it's fine. Right.
Okay, good. What else have we got? Invincible is coming back in March. People will be excited about that. I am not among them, but they will. Now, this is a film, Kay. It's a film. Oh, cool. I'm going to say a film, but it is Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, which lands on Netflix on the 20th of March. So I think that's allowed, right? Because it's
on the cover of the new issue of Empire.
It is on the cover of the new issue of Empire. That's absolutely true.
There's another film that isn't a film that's on Netflix.
Right,
let's
not take the piss. What is it?
Heartstopper. Heartstopper Forever. Heartstopper.
Oh, when does that land?
Yeah. I think it's spring. I haven't got a date for it yet. That is the conclusion of the love story between Kit Connor's character and Joe Locke's character, and it's a feature length. They're calling it a film. Netflix is calling it a film to round off that hugely popular romance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else have we got?
I'll give you some other ones. I don't necessarily have dates for these. But first of all, there's Tiptoe, Russell T. Davis's latest show on set four. That is going to be summer. 2026, summer this year, of course. I'm forgetting that we're going out actually in 2026.
Come on, boy.
So
get
I can
with
stop
it.
Saying 2026 in a minute. That's with Alan Cumming and David Morrissey as neighbors whose a disagreement between them escalates into something truly thrilling and intense. And that's going to be.
Cannot wait for that.
Brilliant. What else is there? Well, we must mention The Pit, which James, of course, has seen on a flight to where was it? Florida?
My Orlando flight there
blah,
and back.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Us normal civilians haven't
normies,
seen it.
Yes.
Normies haven't seen it yet, but that's going to be part of the launch of HBO Max, we mentioned before.
It is, yeah.
With the comeback. And I believe they're making the whole of season one, which we've been waiting a year for, basically, to arrive in the UK. That will all be available on HBO Max, and the new series will start
when?
Well, I think roughly when HBO Max launches, which I assume will be soon. There's no date.
No, there's no exact date. I mean, I think because the comeback's kind of scheduled for March, so I think it'd probably be around then.
Yeah, I think so.
Be my guess. And season two of The Pit will be starting as well. Yes,
you know,
that
I can be a little bit contrary, so ordinarily I would, refuse to watch it, but I'm just desperate to find out what all our listeners have been talking about.
It's definitely worth it. That's an exciting one. What else have we got? Silo season 3 comes to Apple TV Plus in the spring at some point. Very excited about that. I was on set of that, running up and down the silo itself. I know all about
Lest
what happens.
We forget.
I will not tell you. The Capture is back, which is exciting. Also dated
you
for
love
spring.
The Capture, don't
I
you?
Do love The Capture, yeah. But this is the most exciting season of The Capture because The Capture has always been about the manipulation of video footage. Mm. But this will be the first series to go out where the reality has overtaken the fiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the world of The Capture now feels like almost old news, doesn't it? So I'll be fascinated to see how they deal with that and where they go with that show now.
Who's in it, James?
That's Holiday Granger, and I don't know
who
else is going to be in this season.
Yeah, exactly. I genuinely didn't know she was in that. Okay, makes sense now.
You don't know what, did you say?
I said I wasn't asking a leading question.
James said I don't know something or other. He mumbled.
Oh no, I was saying I don't know who else is in this particular season.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, because
Killian Scott is in it from Dublin Murders. Remember Dublin Murders?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, he's in it. And I can also tell you that it all revolves around a sudden act of terror, which she has to deal with. She's now, she's got a new job. As where is it? Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, she got a new job.
And she got a new job. Boy, I can't remember what it is, but it's very important. What else is happening? Euphoria is finishing.
Yeah.
That lands in April on Sky. Now, here's a thing that's landing. This will be on Disney+. This is in April. And it is The Testaments, which is obviously the sequel
to The Handmaid's Tale. This is Margaret Atwood's sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. Now, this, as I understand it, takes place years after the story of The Handmaid's Tale, and it focuses on June's daughter, Agnes, who's going to be played by one battle after another breakout star, Chase Infinity, with the best name in the world. I think Anne Dowd is in this again as Aunt Lydia, and it's Amy Simons is in it.
Is Elizabeth still involved?
I don't know
if she's in this. I genuinely don't know. I don't know enough about it. But I know that the showrunner, the Handmaid's Tale showrunner, Bruce Miller, like as I understand it, he left The Handmaid's Tale to work on The Testaments. It will be, I do not know. I didn't finish The Handmaid's Tale. So if we're going to review this, I'm going to have some brushing up to do. But
Think you'll have had to watch The Handmaid's Tale to watch this, by the way. I don't think that would be a requirement. But
I think it would be help, though, given that it's a sequel.
Depends
on how much trauma you can handle.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because that's why I bailed on Handmaid's Tale, because it just became misery porn, and I didn't need that. So, other dated things that I've got, Your Friends and Neighbours comes in April for its second season. I'm excited about that. The Boys, season 5, which is the final season of The Boys, lands on Prime on the 8th of April. And then the only other thing I have dated for that vaguely is the Doctor Who Christmas special, which is next Christmas, or this Christmas, I should say, James, at the end of this year. So,
that's a very good point. Because we will have waited a long time for this topic. And Russell T. Davies says something like, when he told the BBC of his plan for this Christmas special, they were absolutely like stunned and amazed.
Cock-a-hoop.
I don't think he used that word, but stunned and amazed, that's for sure. I've decided.
Kay, are you excited for Agatha Christie's Endless Night, which is the new Phelpsy?
Oh, yeah, I didn't know. I knew about the Netflix one, which Boyd mentioned.
No, this is the BBC one.
Well, when's the Netflix one arrives very soon. The Netflix one arrives, as I think, if this goes out on the 5th, it arrives in about a week or 10 days, and hopefully we're reviewing it.
That the Seven Dials mystery?
Seven Dials, yeah.
And when's Phelpsy's one out, James?
I don't have a date for you. All I've got is 2026.
I think we'll have to wait. Because they haven't even announced the cast for that, have they? I don't think.
No.
I'll tell you what's coming in February.
Go on.
Is How to Get to Heaven from Belfast.
Yes, Lisa McGee's show.
Yes, the new show for Lisa McGee of Derry Girls fame. And that's got Roisin Gallagher.
All from The Dry. She's brilliant.
Yes, Sinead Keenan from Unforgotten.
Yeah.
Yes, who's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I know her quite well. I'm friends with her, one might say. And the third lead, who plays a character called Dara, has a name that's so complicated, a kind of Irish name, Kay.
Don't attempt it.
I'm not going to attempt, but I'm just going to spell it out for you, and then we'll see if we've got any idea how you pronounce this.
A listener, get in touch with a voice note telling us how to say it, please.
Exactly. This name is C-A-O-I-L F-H-I-O-N-N.
What?
Yes.
It is pronounced, Boydy, Keelin or Quilin, depending on the dialect.
Okay. Wait a minute, how did you know that without even...
What can I tell you, Boyd? I am a dab hand at Google.
Keelan Dunn.
Keelan, yes.
Wow, fascinating. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Together we made it happen. Did we get it right? Who knows? Get in touch.
But yeah, that's an exciting one, definitely.
Yeah, they're paid three friends. They've known each other from school, and then they're suddenly sent on... They go on a wild, like, thrill ride. Lisa McGee says it's like a combination of thriller and a comedy, I think.
Mm.
Very exciting. Mm. Yeah.
You know what else I'm excited about? We're talking about sort of British start stuff. Half Man, which is Richard Gadd's new show with Jamie Bell, which is coming to HBO Max.
What's it about?
I think it's HBO Max in the States, I should say. I think it's on the BBC here in the
BBC,
UK.
BBC One here.
But yeah, it's HBO overseas. But this is a 6-episode. It's set in Scotland. Gadd plays Reuben, and he kind of shows up at the wedding of his estranged brother, Neil, which is Jamie Bell. And then there's, a violent explosion follows. And you get to see, I think it takes place across decades of their lives, and you see how they've kind of affected each other. But Richard Gadd is almost unrecognizable in this role, because he is hench as fuck. Like, he's properly like gymmed up, and he looks terrifying.
He's competing with Tovey in the hench stakes.
That's right, it's true. There's a lot of gym memberships going around recently, clearly.
You might have noticed, as I don't know how much further we're going to go on this, because I've got like about having just done the feature for Heat about the what to look forward to on TV in 2026, 2,000 words of it. I'll just mention a couple of things because you may not be aware, James. I'm sure Kay is, because she doesn't live in a bubble of her own making. But the Men's Football World Cup takes place.
Oh, yeah.
This year.
Oh, I see. When you said football, I thought you were going to talk about Dear England.
Oh, I am. No, I'm about to say. Oh, okay. Steady.
Fine.
Here we go.
Sorry, I've jumped ahead.
Yeah, there's not one, but two football-related shows that are among the most, for me, highly anticipated.
And one of them is the World Cup.
Two of them. The World Cup is the most anticipated event, full stop. I mean, that's just going to take over my life for a month.
I look forward to watching none of it, but carry on.
Yeah, but the two really good things that are going to tie in with it are Dear England, as you say, which is James Grant's adaptation of his own absolutely brilliant play about Gareth Southgate, the former manager, and his impact on the England men's football team.
Played by?
Joseph Fiennes.
Yep.
Yeah, brilliant.
He looks fantastic in this role, by the way.
I've seen the play. He's brilliant. He was in the play as well, the stage play.
Oh, okay.
But just to have loads of actors playing people like Harry Kane and Bukayo Saka, it's just going to be fascinating.
Who can forget such luminary characters?
Yeah. And the other one, James. The other thing that's going to arrive soon, which ties in, is 2026, which is featuring the character of Ian Fletcher, played by Hugh Bonneville from W1A in 2012. Do you remember the comedy series in which he, absolutely hilarious character, in which he played the complete kind of doofus, bumbling doofus, trying to deal with sorting out the world, back then at the Olympics, before that the BBC, and now the World Cup. And he has got a new job as oversight team's director of integrity.
And, oh my god, amazing.
It's going to be absolutely hilarious, and I can't wait to see that. Because
is it a one-off or series?
No, it's a series.
Boyd?
Yeah, it's a series, six-part series.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant.
That's so genuinely exciting.
Yeah.
Jack Thorne has done a Lord of the Flies adaptation.
That's going to be on quite soon, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently it's going to be, I guess, a bit Rashomon-y. My understanding is each episode will be from the perspective of a different one of the boys.
Rashomon.
Stranded on the island. A bit Rashomon-esque. Yeah, indeed. What else have we got? I've got some things on my list. The Vampire Lestat is due to return to our screens, or rather, I should say, Interview with the Vampire return, but the second series is called The Vampire Lestat, or the third series, not the second. Sorry,
it's
we've had two seasons already.
It's just going to return solely to your screen.
Yeah, so basically the first two seasons of Interview with the Vampire were the book Interview with the Vampire, and then this picks up the book The Vampire Lestat, which was Anne Rice's second novel in the series. Very, very excited about that. Sam Reed, who you love, Kay, though not as much as the Night Manager, returns as the Vampire Lestat, and that's very, very cool. Lanterns, which is the HBO Green Lantern DC comic thing. I'm curious, because it's got Carl Chandler in it and Aaron Pierre, both of whom are brilliant, so I'm more interested about that than I would have been with different casting. House of the Dragon Season 3, of course, is this year. Cannot wait to go back to Westeros. That is that the show I'm most excited about this year? It might well be, actually. What else have we got?
Self-question.
Is it? Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. Ted Lasso, I think, is due to come back this year, is it not?
Oh, okay.
Isn't that this year? I'm pretty sure it's this year.
Maybe. They've definitely been filming it. So
yeah, I think that's out this year. And I think Ahsoka Season 2 is this year as well, if you're into the Star Wars stuff. And Vision Quest, which is another Marvel show, which is out this year, which is the kind of continuation of the WandaVision storyline. Dune Prophecy gets a second season this year. That's one of the ones I'm most excited about. Boy, do you like Dune Prophecy,
didn't
you?
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, that's going to be good. Fair. I am less excited about Scrubs Season 10. Which is the kind of legacy sequel, not reboot, but it's a continuation many years on of Bill Lawrence's series, Scrubs.
Listen, my man Bill Lawrence is involved. I feel confident that it won't be a disaster.
Fair. Okay. Kay has faith. Let's see if that faith is misplaced, but we'll find out. Have you heard, Boydie? I don't know if you're a Friday the 13th fan. You know Crystal Lake?
Yes.
Which is the kind of prequel series with Linda Cardellini playing Mrs. Voorhees.
Yeah, I'm interested in that, yeah.
Yeah. Who knows how that'll go? But that, I mean, it's had a bit of a strained production, because this was originally a Brian Fuller show, but he essentially he left. Let's just say he left the show, reasons for which you can kind of look up.
He has a rocky history, doesn't he, of show running? I mean,
things don't always go to plan, and I think this didn't go to plan, and he's no longer a part of that show. And I think the studio will be back. Rivals, isn't Rivals back this year?
Yeah. Yeah, Rivals is definitely
Return
back.
Return to Rutshire.
Later in the year.
We just had the Queen, and she went and visited the set. It's going to be good.
Do you know, it really throws me whenever someone says the Queen did something, I'm like, but she's dead. I'm very
That's why I didn't respond to that, Boyd. I was immediately Miller went.
Because this is the thing. So
She's the fucking queen, isn't she?
I know.
But it's a really curious thing, isn't it? Because in this country, a male consort to a female monarch is not given the title of king. But the female consort to a male monarch is given the title of queen. It's just
good
inconsistent.
Point, James.
But it is. So you get the Duke of Edinburgh, but she is technically the queen. Yes. Yeah, I don't know. It blows my mind because I don't like the inconsistency. I'm sure there's a reason for it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, we'll address this issue when we get to
in a future episode.
Yeah. Yes.
No, but I'm very excited about Rivals coming back.
Okay, good. And isn't there, there is a spin-off, as I understand it, of The Split K called The Split Up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about it before in news. I'm excited for that. They had some good cast names that were announced last year. And I didn't know it was TXing this year. I'm not sure when, though.
No, I don't either. It's just, it's TBC this year, apparently. So,
Christmas, and I think Christmas 2020.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe it's probably New Year's that. Day. Everything's going to be New Year's
Could
Day.
Could be New Year's Day.
I'm going to mention one
knows?
More since you've just been drivelling on for hours now. Which is
it Beef season 2? Because there's a second season of Beef coming.
Yeah, okay. No, that'll be good. Now this is coming soon this spring. The Other Bennet Sister. Have you heard about this, Kate? Yeah, it's
tell me.
It's a fresh take on the character of Mary Bennet, who is the middle sister in Pride and Prejudice.
Mm.
And in this show, it's kind of, she gets to her own romance. So it's kind of like a revisionist look at Jane Austen's book. But the cast includes Richard E. Grant and Ruth Jones together as Mr. and Mrs. Bennet. So I consider that to be excellent casting.
Listen, frankly. You know I love Jane Austen, so I will be definitely watching that.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Well, that was
that is a wrap.
Minute,
that was a mess.
Very brief, pricey look at what's coming your way on the small screen in 2026. We hope that has in some way been helpful. I mean, it probably hasn't, but sure. Now, Kay, the question is, what do we do next? Are we going to have a listener question?
Yes, we are.
Oh, we are. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Hit
and
us
this
with
is
it.
From this is from an avid listener. Sometimes listener, Cool K Ribeiro, who wanted to ask you guys, it's a good question. What are your New Year's resolutions, but like around entertainment this year? So I'll give you a clue. So mine, for example, is this year I'm committed to finish a lot of series I started last year for the pod and that didn't get the time to finish. So I've got a little hit list and I'm going to work my way through it. Also, I'm going to try and read some more books. Because just mix things up a bit. Because I hardly did any reading in 2025, and that's not like me. So yeah, I'm hitting the library, guys.
An entertainment resolution. Oh dear,
can I suggest
very stressful.
One for you?
Oh god, if this is going to involve shrinking.
No, but I do think maybe you should be more committed to not rewatching.
I don't rewatch as much as you think I do.
I'm only saying it because every time we talk about what we've been watching, you go, "Oh, I've started a massive rewatch of The Night Manager / Friends / West Wing."
It was only six episodes; it wasn't that bad. But that was homework. That was homework for us to review The Night Manager because it was coming back and it's been 10 years.
What homework was that for?
That's mental health homework.
Yeah.
I only rewatched Game of Thrones once.
But yeah, you do rewatch a lot of old stuff.
Hey, we remember the news article that came out when it said it's emotional regulation, isn't it? It's good
dog.
Mental health. Yeah. You need to emotionally regulate. You watch something you've seen before so that it's calming and it's soothing. There are a few greater pleasure, I think, than rewatching a great series that you know you love. So I promise absolutely nothing in that regard. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, what are your promises then with regards to entertainment?
I'm going
to
find out what Boyd's are first.
Oh, God, I don't know. You're going first.
I don't have any resolutions.
Okay.
Go on, Boydo's got one. Come on.
There's quite a few shows that I really like watch the first few episodes, you know, for review here or, you know, in my day job, which I don't finish, even though I really like them and I really want to finish. So I think just finishing more of the shows that sometimes go by the wayside a bit, like get, you know, deep into them halfway through even sometimes and just don't quite finish
them. It's quite similar to mine, Boydo.
Oh. Is it exactly the same as yours?
Yes, pretty much.
Yes!
The exact same thing that Kay said when you weren't listening.
This is amazing because now Boyd's been exposed as not listening to me either. This is sensational. James has been vindicated.
I was so bowled over by the one about reading, not reading any books, that I forgot the previous. I think it was slightly different what you were saying.
No, I did. Anyway, whatever. But that's, yeah, it's a good commitment because we do have to watch a lot of first episodes, second episodes, etc. But I also run out of time because of the, like, obviously the vast amount that we're watching. So I think it's a good endeavour to have a sense of completion on some of these series that we love.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. My resolution is this. I'm going to go through my sofa list and delete a load of them because I'm looking through my sofa list now and I realise that there are a lot of shows on this list that I just don't ever need to watch.
Can you give us just three? Just tell us three that you're going to delete.
Okay, three that I'm going to delete. I'm going to delete Statlet's Flats because I'm not going to like it.
Surprise.
And it's a comedy, yeah.
Do you know what? I'm going to do it now. I'm going to do it live. Oh, he's gone. Stath is no longer on the list.
It's a great show. Station 11.
Station 11, I watched all of it except for, I think, the last two episodes.
What?
But it's been like, what, 3 years now? Longer? And at this point, I can't remember anything that came before it. So I think I'm probably going to kick that
James,
in the head.
You genuinely like are so confusing to me, right? Because you're so like... You always want to finish. You are so methodical when you're watching. And then sometimes you do this batshit thing where you just want to watch a whole series and then go, yeah, I just didn't watch the last episode. I was like, what are you talking about?
I don't know what happened there. I think I just ran out of steam. Tokyo Vice is another one. I'm taking that off the list. That's going. Yeah. That's gone. Right, I've deleted it. It's gone. What else have I got on here? There's some rewatch. That's Succession. Delete. I'm never going to do it. Just remove it. It's gone. What else? Cruel Summer. Right, that can go as well. I'm taking Cruel Summer off the list.
I think this is something good for you to do over, well,
this is very therapeutic. I'm enjoying this. Why is Scott and Bailey on my list? Right, that's going.
Aren't you happy I asked this question now? And I'm sure the listeners are delighted that they can hear an online deletion.
I'm sure they are. I am culling the sofa list as we speak. The last one I'm going to remove is Condor, which I actually enjoyed quite. I quite enjoyed Condor, but realistically, again, I'm not going to get back to it. So,
okay,
yeah, good. So we've made progress. I've knocked like five or six shows off the sofa list.
See, a good question. Now, I'd politely ask that you shut the app so that when we're talking next, you're not just looking down to leave.
I'm just pruning things from my to watch list. Nope, nope, nope. Okay, this has been good. Right, it is a brand new year, but if you would like to send us messages, you know where to send them. It's pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Now, we're not going to have any news this week. Do you know why? Because the news hasn't happened yet. So you're going to have to bear with us. But we do have some guests, specifically Malachi Kirby and Erin Doherty. So we can't review A Thousand Blows Season 2, even though it is out this week, because it is also embargoed. But we do have those two stars with us this week. Malachi Kirby, who plays bare-knuckle boxer Hezekiah Mosco, and Erin Doherty, who plays girl crime boss Mary Carr. And they're both stopped by to talk to Jordan King ahead of Stephen Knight's show returning to Disney Plus this Friday. And this is how it went.
It is a real pleasure to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast by two of the stars of Disney Plus's A Thousand Blows. We have the Queen of the 40 Elephants herself, Erin Doherty, and we have the King of the East End Ring, Mr. Malachi Kirby. How are you both today?
Very good. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. I literally finished season two just last night. So I'm like fresh off of the adrenaline rush of the final episode.
Amazing.
And it's a very appropriately another knockout run of episodes, just to get a pun in very early. But I wanted to actually start by asking what it was like for you coming back onto set for the first day of season two, as opposed to that first day on season one. Like, was there a sense of pressure at all building on that great run of first episodes? Or, you know, are you familiar enough with this world now that you just wanted to jump straight back in?
Do you know what? Because we did it back to back. I think we literally had like a week off in between. So it felt like we'd never left, honestly. It was just kind of a continuation of where we'd started. So very much felt at home.
Yeah. I was like you were saying, like your last kind of option, it was just a raring to go. Like we had genuinely fallen in love, like as a cast and crew, but also I feel you'd be the same. Like I've fallen in love with Mary.
Yeah.
So I was just like so excited to pick her back up again and to take her on season two's journey.
Yeah, and then that creates a really interesting dynamic then when you think about the fact that season two obviously begins with this time jump, so we're a year further down the line from the events of season one. And I was just wondering sort of what the conversations that you guys had with each other and with Stephen Knight, the creator, obviously going into season two, like what sort of conversations were you having about Mary and Hezekiah's dynamic going into this series? How many of those gaps did you fill for yourselves, and how much did you just leave to happen when the cameras were rolling?
To be honest, most of it, I just kind of left to when the cameras are rolling. I like to kind of just be present and instinctive. There was probably a couple of questions that I had about like the general arc and just kind of pacing myself for where I need to get to versus where I start. But for the most part, I kind of just like turning up. And I think because we'd done so much of the work for season one already, yeah, there was already a strong foundation. We knew who these people were and the circumstances that they were existing in. And so there wasn't so many questions to ask for the next season for me.
Yeah. Mine was exactly the same. Yeah. Just kind of, and also I suppose it just comes down to trusting Steve Knight and being like, I have complete faith that you are going to take this woman or man wherever they need to go, and just surrendering to that and then working day by day. Cause I think like it's also a case of when you're shooting a TV series, like there is so much content that you actually just, for me anyway, I had to do it in bite-sized chunks anyway and just go, okay, what are we shooting now? And then let's give our all to that day.
Yeah.
So I didn't, like, I got to the point when I was just like living day to day, what are we doing? How can I best serve Mary? But yeah, ultimately it came down to a trust and just a real excitement for what Steve had done with these people.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, that almost feels a little bit like it mirrors the sort of pattern of Series 1 kind of being this. I think Hezekiah says in an early episode of Series 1, let's see how the river runs when he arrives in London, and that kind of idea of finding your path as you go. But obviously for Hezekiah and Mary, one of the really beautiful things about that first series was seeing their coming together, that this sort of survivor's instincts drawing them closer to each other, and then they allowed themselves to become vulnerable. And we also got to see the kind of fallout of that. And then this time around, there's in one of the early episodes, you sort of talk to each other and you say, one of you is a queen without a palace, the other is a boxer without a ring, you're a man and a woman with no nice words to say to each other. Mm. And I just wondered for yourselves, like, you bring so much warmth to your pairing in that first series. How did it feel then to be playing the opposite side of that on the emotional spectrum going into series two?
I didn't like it. I just want them to get back together and be happy again. Do you know what I mean? I keep telling you, sort it out.
Yeah, but Mary's like trying it, like she like respects and sees what you need. But she's like a toddler almost, like she's done one thing her whole life. And then you rock up and she's like, how do I navigate this? So she's like miles and miles behind you and your like level of emotional intelligence, that it's just like, it's a little bit of a, I mean, it is, it's a kind of cat and mouse. How do we make this? That's what season two is essentially, is them both trying and wanting each other, but not really understanding how to make it work.
Yeah.
But it's like, that was so fun to play.
Yeah.
But we didn't get that many scenes together.
No, we didn't, because, yeah. I stopped biting the finger, but yeah.
But you have got a really interesting sort of setup with A Thousand Blows, where obviously you've both worked in historical dramas before, and you've both worked in sort of stories based on real life stories. So obviously for yourself, Malachi with Roots and My Name is Leon. And then for yourself, Aaron, with things like Firebrand, The Crown. And I do wonder, you're getting to play these people that, and it's probably something you've been asked about a lot, that you're playing people that existed, but you're playing them in scenarios that Stephen Knight has created from newspaper clippings and things that are, you know, are just plausibly could have happened enough that they can go in there. But in terms of you guys, then, do you like to go really deep into your research process for preparing, or do you like to sort of be more instinctive? I feel like Malachi, you've already kind of set the tone for how you approach these things with being in the moment. But how do you balance that? There's so much that you could jump into if you wanted to, but also how much do you just let your actor's instincts go?
I think for me, as much as it's important for me to be in the moment, when it comes to like telling real people's stories, it's really important to do the research, right? And one thing that I found is like, it's, well, not all the time. Sometimes like there's actual information on the actual person as opposed to just the things that they did. But with Hezekiah, it was more just like knowing where he existed and some of the stuff that he achieved. So in terms of who he actually was, there wasn't a lot of information about that. So that stuff I have to kind of just make up and use the given circumstances to kind of place it all together and join the dots. And that's a lot of fun. You know, you kind of always find yourself getting surprised by the things that they do, but also the things that they're capable of doing and the people they're capable of being. And I love, again, it's kind of credit to Steve Knight's writing that, like, none of these characters are one-dimensional. Like, at any point in the show, like, there's always layers in every moment of them. So yeah, there's always a lot of fun to play with.
Mm. My kind of process is very similar. Like, I'll do the work kind of prior to. So it kind of all happened before we'd even started shooting season one.
Yeah, yeah.
Did all that I could there, but then there's something magic that happens that, like, it's by spending a certain amount of time in someone's shoes, they just kind of begin to really live. And it's only because of all the groundwork that they're able to come alive. But then there's something for me really exciting about rocking up every day and having no, like, preconceived notion of how a scene's going to go.
Yeah. You kind of just discover it as you're going.
Yeah.
And maybe I have an idea of how Hez is going to feel when he first meets Mary, but then I meet you and I'm like, oh, this is how I feel.
Yeah. And you have to use that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really fun. And also it's a credit to obviously the writing, because the scenes can be done in a multitude of ways. So you could find yourself making one decision and then you go for take three and you're like, oh, then we went down that path. Like, it's so... These characters are so real that it's the whole thing is malleable, which is, like, I think that's the gift of playing real people, is that it's there for you. Mm. So you can just kind of go on any journey that any director or creative wants to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to hear. I was lucky enough to, I spoke with Stephen last week, for our website, and, he talked about the kind of, the benefit that he felt as a writer of having you guys come on board the project so early. So he was only, I think, on writing episode two when you guys were first cast. And he talked to me, something that I thought was really interesting was that he spoke about how he hasn't been able to help writing to the actors. So his idea of who Hezekiah was, informed by research and things obviously going into it, changed completely once he saw you, Malachi, starting to embody and explore that character. You know, you found grace notes within him that Stephen wouldn't have known was there until he saw you playing them. And he said that that's greatly informed the writing going into season two. And you both talk sort of so passionately about these real figures and how real they feel. And I just wondered whether that's a two-way stream then, where not only are you bringing a lot of yourselves and your acting sensibilities to these characters, but do you find elements of Mary and Hezekiah seeping into you and, you know, into your sense of self when you come off set?
I'm very intentional about not doing that now.
No.
And kind of making sure that there's a boundary between myself and my own heart and my own state of being and the characters. But there are things about Hezekiah that I kind of aspire to. And honestly, things about Mary that I aspire to. And so, like, I can kind of take that like I would in everyday life and go, oh, I like these traits and I like how that looks and I like what those traits are able to achieve and work towards that. But in terms of, like, consciously carrying it or keeping it with the character, that's a boundary for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mine's very similar. Like, I think consciously I love putting my own clothes on at the end of the day and getting in the car and going home. Like, that's lovely. But I do think, naturally, subconsciously, when you're living inside someone's brain, like, they're going to hang about. Like, they're gonna, yeah. And there is something, and it's only once you leave a job that you realize where that subconscious has been located and, like, the kind of small, subtle influences that may have been having over your life or the way that you just carry yourself. So yeah, I found, like, when we fully finished shooting both seasons back to back, and I'd stepped away from Mary for a bit, I think, yeah, like, she was kind of giving me a little bit of, like, confidence, maybe. Like, it's just something as simple as that. I think, like, whoever you're embodying, they do kind of get in there.
No, both of them.
They do.
Mm.
Yeah, that's really interesting insight. And, I mean, you've both obviously played characters as well that have, at least as a viewer, it feels like it's necessitated you going to some of those places where maybe you would coming out the other side of it want to be a bit more guarded or a bit more intentional with creating those boundaries. I think about when I watched Roots for the first time, Malachi, and how powerful I found that experience. And I think about adolescence even earlier this year for yourself, Aaron. But yeah, that's really interesting to hear. And something else that, to sort of move away from slightly heavier territory for a moment, but something else that I really love about A Thousand Blows is it's such an immersive world that's been built. Obviously, we talk a lot about the incredible set that you're getting to walk on day to day. The production design from Tom Burton, costume design from Maya Meshadet. Shout out to both of them for an incredible job on season two. Yeah. But something that really, really, I don't know what it is about it, but it just really struck me in season two especially, is the presence of supporting artists and extras and how busy and bustling they make so many of the scenes in the series. And I wonder for yourselves as actors getting to work among this sort of very lively atmosphere, what that gives you and how much you appreciate having, you know, if you're going to have a crowd scene, you've actually got a proper crowd there to play off of. What does that do for you guys?
Honestly, for me, those guys, the supporting artists are like the backbone of this, you know, and there's times in the past where, you know, sets can kind of treat supporting artists like furniture. And like, actually, you know, like, I love the fact that with this crew, like, everyone is important, everyone is relevant, and everyone is treated as such. And you just get better art out of that, you know, when you realize that these people in the background are actually contributing to the show. They're not just passing by. Like, they need to know what world they're existing in, so that they can actually exist with us as opposed to just beside us, mm-hmm. you know, and they do that, you know, and honestly, like, they're so, what's the word? When you give a lot, generous with their energy. Like, they're probably on set longer than anybody else in terms of like cars. They don't ever get off and they're just always on. Do you know what I mean? Like, they never turn off and like genuinely across the board seem happy to be there as well, which I think is testament to the environment we created there. So honestly, it wouldn't have been the same without them.
Yeah. I second that wholeheartedly. Like, even just like, because obviously we were so lucky to just have that world built for us. So we spent so long on that set. So by the time it came to season two, like, you really, really knew these people. And so you were genuinely like looking for those little glances even with the people that, like, so it enriched everything and made it so much more like your imagination just flew because everything was done for you.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, because a lot of the time, like, you're rocking up, you've got, especially on TV, like, you don't have very long to get certain scenes. But when everything's there, you're like diving into Victorian London. And like, those people made that possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that note, thank you for helping us dive into Victorian London again with season two. I very much hope that there will be seasons 3, 4, or 5 and many more to come. But thank you so much for your time, guys. It's been lovely talking to you both.
I know.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
That's all.
Thank you.
That was Malachi Kirby and Aaron Doherty. And now it is time for this week's reviews. And if you are wondering at any point why I do not turn to Boydie at the end of each review and say, Boydie, when is this out? It's because every single one of these aired on New Year's Day. So you can watch them all now. But that said, the first we are tackling this week is The Night Manager Season 2, which joins us 10 years after the first series made its debut, based as it was on the novel of the same name by John le Carré and starring Tom Hiddleston as nocturnal hotelier Jonathan Pine, who gets caught up in the kind of high-risk, high-reward world of Hugh Laurie's charismatic arms dealer. And so this, now a decade on, Jonathan Pine, or is it Thomas Quince or Andrew Birch? He's a man of many names. But he's now operating under a completely different identity because Pine and Quince and Birch have been erased from the record, and he's now heading up the security service's Night Owl service, where they conduct covert sort of after-hours surveillance. That is, until someone from his past catches up with him. Boydie. As our resident hotelier, who has regaled us on many occasions with stories of your stays in purchased accommodation, please give us a TripAdvisor rating for this.
Yes, I don't use TripAdvisor, but if I did, what are their rating system? How does the rating system work? Is it like...
Is it out of 5 or 10? I don't know. 10? I don't get to go on holiday, Boydie.
No. Okay. Yeah, this is very highly anticipated because remember the opening episode of season one of The Night Manager was absolutely spectacular. Remember that was like kind of attack on the family, on the Greek, Hugh Laurie's family on the Greek island. And then he arrived, the Night Manager arrived and kind of went undercover, infiltrated them, and there was a constant tension of would they work out who he was. And I would say the first episode of the new series isn't quite as spectacular as that. There's still it ends up in a very exciting situation, but I would say it's a slightly slower burn for me, this first episode, than the first one, the original one. But that's not to say it's not completely engrossing and compelling, because it is. And it's just brilliant to have this kind. I love John le Carré, and the characters that he creates with their kind of moral ambiguity and are constantly looking into the world of espionage where decisions have to be made for seemingly the greater good, but by people who are often have no morals whatsoever. So it ends up being there's constant questions of the right or wrong thing to do. And that is very much all present and correct in this new series. And I quite like the fact that his character is Tom Hiddleston's character, whichever we call him, Pine. Let's call him Pine for the sake of
let's call him Pine.
His original name is like running this kind of like surveillance operation in a cupboard somewhere in London, and he's definitely kind of gone down in terms of glamour and excitement, but he seems to be accepting of that. And then suddenly he sees this person on where his cameras are shooting, who he thinks was a person he was connected to in season one, connected to Hugh Laurie's character and his nefarious goings on. And
there Richard Onslow Roper.
Thank you, Richard Onslow Roper. So there are enough. Olivia Colman's back. All the still alive people are back. And there's an interesting thing going on with Roper's son, who's at a Ponzi private school somewhere, and is deeply resentful of stuff. So there's lots of strands to it, and I was completely gripped, and there are enough twists and turns, and in the end it is quite spectacular as well because of what happens, which even though it's gone out, I'm worrying about spoilers, but it has gone out and people would have seen it by now. But I really enjoyed it. It's very slickly made. It's quite cinematic and quite spectacular and beautifully filmed and brilliantly directed, and yeah, it's great. What can I say?
What indeed. Okay.
I enjoyed this immensely. I do agree with Boydo in terms of it being less, at first, you know, a bit more of a slow burn, less high octane, the first half, I'd say, but then obviously it really kicks off. And so, as I discussed, I recently watched the first series because I'd only half watched it. So I did that knowing that this was coming up, and it was so acutely tense, and my cortisol was spiking so much. I was really nervous about this one. And that's the thing about this show, is that it maintains such a high level of tension and stress that it should be something that I cannot watch. But yeah, it's so well made and so brilliant done. The cast is fantastic, as you've noted. I also want to mention the fact that the Reverend from this country, Paul Shahidi, is it?
Yeah,
he's in it as well, which was a bonus for me. And yeah, I just thought it was great. And because I have watched it more recently, I just think that Tom Hiddleston is still so convincing. I'm saying Pine Fresh. Like, he is And he's in good nick. And you just kind of think, yeah, I really believe that this is a guy who has, you know, 10 years on or whatever it is, and is still sort of committed to this role. And, you know, he's kind of this loner who has to necessarily keep off grid. And so he's taken on this night owl's job, but always itching to get involved in something bigger. And he gets that opportunity. And of course, there is a beautiful woman involved, as there's bound to be. But yeah, I just thought, I mean, it's glamorous, it's thrilling. It's just the Night Manager is synonymous with excellent quality, and it doesn't disappoint this time.
We talked about this when I was doing my rewatch of it. It's just that it's so continent hopping, and it's so location based, and they go from one stunning place to another in the first series. And this one, again, it begins in London, but they end up in South America. So there's a lot of that going on there. It still looks wonderful. It's, I thought, a little bit harder to parse than the first one. The first one has it's based on a book, so it does have that kind of very tight literary structure to it, where you have that really engaging Egyptian prologue, and then you go into him in, I think it's Switzerland, and then that sets up the whole Roper saga, which kind of plays out bit by bit. This felt a little bit less clear to me, just in the structure. Not in that I was finding it particularly hard to follow, but just it doesn't quite have that almost perfectly constructed feel to it. And I bear in mind, I'm only going off the first two episodes, so it may well develop that going on, to be fair. So I've only seen the first two, and I've enjoyed it enormously. But this one, we should say, obviously not being based on a Le Carré novel, this is an original story for television. I suppose going into this, I was a bit like, oh, will it live up to it? Will it be as good? I don't know. And while a lot of the characters from the first series do turn up, it is sometimes a bit of a kind of like tip of the hat rather than a, you know, the returning regulars. Like, it is very much here, you know, Indira Varma in this one, Hayley Squires in this one, and obviously Tom Hiddleston again. But the main characters in this, obviously, Camilla Marone and Diego Calva. We won't say exactly who they play here. But it's an interesting story. It has, shall we say, DNA shared with the first series. Whether you buy into that aspect of it remains to be seen, I think. But yeah, did I love it? Absolutely. Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. But I'm not convinced yet that it's going to be on a par with the first one. So I'll wait until this series is done, and then we'll see.
It's a high bar, though, isn't it? It's a really
high bar. Yeah, that's the thing. The bar is so high that even it just being a little bit less than that, it's still going to be better than the majority of shows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. I wasn't bored for 1 second. I enjoyed every moment I spent with this.
You'll be happy to know.
Yes, they will. Yeah. No, I really, really loved it. But it's so hard to live up to that first season. Because, like, when it was a limited series, it was one of the best limited series. Now it's an ongoing concern. Obviously, it's now qualifies as that. But, yeah, really excited about this. Loved it.
Everyone should watch.
We shall see how it plays out. Will it live up to expectations? I don't know. Let's hope. But anyway, The Night Manager, which aired on New Year's Day on BBC One. And is now boarded. So did the first two go out on New Year's Day?
No.
What's the deal with the rest of them?
No, it then reverts to Sunday nights, 9 o'clock.
Sunday nights.
We'll carry on Sunday nights. I think, I was about to say it'll all be on iPlayer, but actually I don't know if it will be. I think there might be.
I don't think it should be.
No.
I think people should have to wait for Sunday.
I think I should be able to watch them all now.
Well, yeah, because you're spoiled.
Of course you do, you greedy guts.
Yeah. No, it'll be on Sunday nights. I don't think it will be all on iPlayer because I think they're keeping it back.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I think one thing that I thought was quite an interesting take on this is where we find Pine 10 years later after the Roadrunner, mm-hmm. and how it's affected him and the choices that he's made, not to spoil anything, about what to do with his life since then. I think it's quite interesting, in keeping with the character as well.
Hence working in the cupboard, with the
as
youngsters.
As discussed.
With the night owls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Next up, we have Runaway, or Harlan Coben's Runaway, I should say, to give it its full title, in what has now become something of a New Year's tradition. So this is adapted from Coben's novel of the same name, and it's been adapted by Danny Brocklehurst once again, and once again brings that very specific, slightly heightened tone that Danny Brocklehurst brings to the Harlan Coben projects. And this is the story of James Nesbitt's Simon Green and the hunt for his runaway daughter. Now, can we please get Kay Ribeiro's review of Harlan Coben's Runaway?
You can. So this starts obviously with a flashback, and we learn how the young girl, who we learn to be is Paige, has been attacked. And then it skips forward to a year on, and her dad, Simon, played by Jimmy Nesbitt, as you said, is tipped off about her whereabouts as she's gone missing. And then he has this encounter with her and her drug addict boyfriend, which doesn't go very well. And the police come a knocking, let's just say that. The police played by Alfred Enoch. Simultaneously, we learn about this woman played by Ruth Jones. She's called Elena, who's a private investigator who's carrying out a separate investigation. But in time, Simon and Elena's paths will cross. Add to that mix, John Poynting, who is also in this, seemingly playing a hired assassin. So there's a lot going on. This is what I'd say. The first episode, there's a lot going on, a lot of characters to get a grip with and different storyline strands. I would say, right, I wasn't a fan of Lazarus because of, you know, the supernatural element.
Or was it?
Or was it? Yeah, indeed. The suspected supernatural element. Honestly, I didn't love this either, which is odd for me because I'm probably the target audience. But I felt like while there was a lot going on, I didn't feel particularly engaged by the characters or the central story. It left me a bit cold. And I thought it was clunky in places. Like, for example, Ruth's character, who you'd think is terrible at her job, considering how sort of ham-fisted she is with some of the investigative work she does, right? And it's really done in this kind of pronounced way of, like, you know, you're watching it thinking, how is she not getting caught? And you presume she's rubbish at her job, and then you're told that actually she's meant to be one of the best PIs around. You're like, really? To use James's intonation.
Do you think that's because of the way it's shot? Because you know, we talk about this, that Danny Brockerhurst kind of, because if you read the Harlan Coben books, they're not camp or silly, really.
No, they're quite
serious. But always these TV adaptations have a slightly silly camp feel to them. Like, it's subtle, like it's not super camp, but there's a touch of it. Like, there's a bit here where Ruth Jones is hiding behind a tree. And it's like, is this being played? And you're never quite sure if it's being played for laughs or not. And so it's exactly what you said. So she seems a bit incompetent because of stuff like that. But I think it's just, is the tonality of the show, which I must admit, I do struggle with a little bit.
I think it's to its detriment, because it makes you feel that, like, Ruth is obviously a fantastic actress. It makes you think she's obviously completely terrible and inept, as you say, but she's not meant to be. Yeah. Sorry, the character, Lena. Yeah. Ruth's not inept at all. Similarly with John Poynting, there's a moment where he is hired to kill someone. And I don't know if that, I mean, maybe I was just like zoned out for a second. I don't think there was a silencer on the gun yet. He's really, you know, he's got a laissez-faire attitude to the whole thing, you know, about getting caught. Seemingly in this time frame that this has been filmed, there's no ring doorbells. You know, it's just like, it doesn't make sense. These adaptations can be quite overblown and exaggerated. We saw that with Fool Me Once, and I actually liked Fool Me Once. So I don't quite know why this one isn't landing with me, but I don't think I'll be carrying on.
Do you think Lazarus has poisoned the well for you?
Yeah, probably that's what's happened. Look, I won't have to wait long for another one. I'm sure I'll change my mind when the next adaptation comes out. But for now, it hasn't hooked me.
You know, it's funny you say, because I really like Harlan Coben's novels. I can't say I've read about maybe 6 or 7 of them in total. Really, really like those. But I don't always get on with these series. And I do think for me, oh, look, you've got a copy of Nobody's Fool there in your room. Very good. I find, again, it's the silly tone, which I think a lot of people really like about this. I need my shit to take itself much more seriously. And it bugs me a little bit. So yeah, it doesn't quite sit right.
How did you get on with Fool Me Once? Because that was a similar tone. I didn't actually have a problem with it so much there, I think. I don't know why. Yeah. I'd be interested. Boyd, I imagine you're signed up.
Well, I really enjoy it. Yeah. I think these shows are a real treat. Yeah. I mean, I think, they have a slightly, I would describe it as an off-kilter tone to them. So, they're constantly, I think it's part of the whole desire to keep us on our toes and not really understand necessarily what's happening. Like, for example, Ruth Jones's character, right, who is a private detective. It's not made clear that she is until, I don't know, halfway through the episode, roughly speaking. And they kind of show her doing stuff that is weird. And, you know, you're like, why is she doing that? Why has she gone to this cafe to be obsessed with this one of the people who works there? And almost every single, I think, and Daniel Brockhurst, who, as you say, does most of the writing, I think there's a writer's room as well, but I think he's constantly trying to reflect that Harlan Coben is the master of the twist. So the plot plays out and the characters develop in a series of mini twists, you know, that you're kind of like, what's the expression? Kay's looking askance at me there, listeners, as if I'm talking rubbish, but you know. Yeah, absolutely.
each their own. The video's not going out, is it?
No, let's hope not. Well, actually, maybe the video will be going out. It could be. So it's kind of like twisty and turny, even in a micro sense, you know, literally from one scene to the next. And characters behave in a way that you're like, why are they doing that? What possible reason? And that is definitely, that does reflect what happens in the books, I think. But it's the slightly exaggerated, almost comedic, slightly camp sometimes tone that I think you're going on about, James, that isn't in the book, that is different. Yeah, I think that's true. But as a celebration of kind of complicated plotting and pulling the rug from under us as viewers and providing all of these narrative surprises, I really enjoy it. I really, and this one is as full, if not more full, of that stuff than as ever. And they're different. They're definitely a different tonality to the books, but I still really enjoy I actually really enjoy that there's a sort of self-aware preposterousness to it in a way. And the things you listed, Kay, like the, you know, implausible, seemingly implausible moments all the way through. A lot of the time, those implausible moments end up being not that implausible because there's some kind of explanation for it, but maybe not always. But I do really dig. I was going to say, sounding like an aging rocker. I dig this stuff, man. I really enjoy it, these shows. And I'm just that, but this one in particular, the main joy of it for me is, unsurprisingly, because I am biased, Ruth Jones and having a great time as this, as a very different kind of character that we've seen her play in recent times. And she goes for it, and it's really entertaining.
Do you know what? I just also want to mention that Annette Badland's in this, and she played Aunt Babe in EastEnders, and she's really good.
Oh, she's great.
Her role.
Yeah.
And Minnie Driver plays Simon's wife. Minnie, who, I mean, I'm not going to say Renaissance because obviously I'm sure she's very prolific, but she's also in Emily in Paris at the moment. Paris. So she is, she's everywhere.
Well, at least in two shows, yeah.
two shows that I'm watching, boy. That is everywhere. Thank you very much.
Pretty much.
She's everywhere for Kay.
What's your vendetta against Minnie Driver?
yeah, boy, why do you hate Minnie Driver?
Why do you hate Minnie?
No, I love Minnie Driver.
Yeah, sure.
Can't get it.
I think the central mystery here, like this idea that rather than it being a murder, like it's his missing daughter, I think that's instantly quite hooky. And I think the encounter that he has with her quite early on does draw you in. So I actually do think this is a very, very grabby show. Weirdly, it was the Ruth Jones character that pulled me out of this, because I think a lot of the off-kilter / silly / camp stuff centered around that character, and so I was just like, I don't know what I'm watching here, and it's also distracting me from the part of the show that I'm interested in. Like I say, only based on the first episode, so I don't know how that intertwines with
and
it.
And also, but there's some decisions that the couple make to, you know, in this episode that I'm a bit like meh. But yeah, I think it is that character. It's nothing to do with Ruth's performance. It's more the character.
I think as time goes on, I've seen more episodes. Her relationship with James Nesbitt's character comes to the fore, and they form a really good double act together. I think you'll enjoy it more as it goes on if you definitely carry on watching under the new New Year's resolution regime, in which we're all going to finish the shows and start watching.
I've started, so I'll finish,
as well as promising to listen to everything that we all say. Yeah. That's the biggest challenge of all, isn't it? Really, that's
yeah.
I thought one person more than another.
Yeah, I thought Kay's entertainment sort of resolution was going to be, I'm going to give science fiction a chance. I'm really going to throw myself into new genres, strange new worlds.
Well, there might be something on the horizon, but I don't want to make any promises just yet. But
no, that's
exciting. Kay, you're launching your own sci-fi TV podcast or something.
Yeah, I am.
What could that mean?
That would be amazing. Kay to the stars.
Tantalizing.
Okay. Runaway then, which is all available on the Netflix and was as of New Year's Day. Finally, this week in our New Year's Day rundown, we have Red Eye, the second series of Red Eye. This is Peter A. Dowling's ITV thriller, which previously saw Richard Armitage on an overnight flight from London to Beijing, but now introduces Martin Compston and a threat to the US Embassy. And Jing Lucy and Gemma Moore, Leslie Sharp, they're all back as well. Boydy, this show does not, in fact, involve a Red Eye anymore, does it? So I guess any more than series two of Vigil involved a submarine. But please do explain all to us.
It does have plane-based thrills, though.
Okay.
Because the first of all, it starts with an opening plane-based thrill, which is quite cleverly made, directed, and edited. And so they kind of, I don't know what the technical term for it is, but it's like there's a terrible incident aboard a plane, and the camera and the images kind of go one after the other, and then there's like it goes to black. And then there's another image. Do you know what? Is there a technical term for that, James? I'm ham-fisted.
Oh, there's lots where the basically it's like the missing frames, isn't it? Where you're missing, where the footage is on and then it cuts out. And then it comes back in, then cuts out. Yeah.
It's
a good technique.
I think the technical term is stoppy-starty.
It's stoppy-starty, yeah. Okay. It's a stoppy-starty.
Mm. The stoppy-starty opening plane action. And then it settles down to kind of introduce the characters from the previous series, catching up with where they are. Jing Lucy's character, Leslie Sharp's character, etc. They're all doing it in it, still doing interesting stuff. And then we bring in Martin Compston, and there's a Martin Compston and Jing Lucy's characters are at it again. They have history,
arguing
basically,
rather than at sex.
Yeah, at it as in at each other's throats. I was going to say, yeah, yeah. They have history, not necessarily romantic, but they have history involving controversial incident that happened a few years ago. And let's just say there's no love lost between the two of them. And there are, guess what, kids? Jurisdictional disagreements are at the heart of this story, because he thinks, Martin Compson thinks he has jurisdictional powers. And she's like, no, you haven't. You shouldn't be anywhere near this case of whatever the case is that happens in an airport. And then, you know, this stuff is investigated. I'm trying to spoil it, even though it went out New Year's Day. And I think is all available on ITV, I think, ITVX. Anyway, so they're at each other's throats. And then there is a big murder. There's a mystery. But there is plane-based thrills as well, more, even though it's not this literally the red eye. Because Leslie Sharp's character, Madeline, is on her way to, where's she going, Kay? I can't remember. Do you remember?
She returned from the US?
Yeah.
She's basically aboard the plane that is in danger.
She is aboard
a private jet.
Yeah, she is on a flashy special governmental jet or something, which is the target, it becomes clear, towards the end of episode one, of the mysterious terrorists, if you like. So she's right at the center. So it's like almost like a reverse of series one. With series one, she was on the ground, wasn't she, in her office, looking at the drama playing out in front of her and trying to work out what the best thing to do is with the people, with the guy, whether Richard Armitage's character was good or bad or not. And in this, she's right in the middle of the plane that is being under threat, and everyone else is looking at her or looking at what's going on in the plane and elsewhere, led by Jing Lucy and Martin Compton. Bottom line is, I love this stuff. As I've said many, many times before, and I said it, I mean, I
love the plane.
I hosted series one's Q&A, and I think you hosted series two, Kay. We're all over this show. And I remember saying to the guy who writes it, Peter A. Dowling, who had written a film set aboard a plane, how much I enjoyed plane set thrills. And this one, and I was thinking when it was announced there'd be Red Eye 2, are they going to, it's a bit like Hijack, isn't it? It's like, what are they going to do? What mode of transport and what route and where are they going to go to make it feasible that these characters would return and be embroiled in another storyline involving basically plane-based, in this case, thrills? But they pull it off. I was fully, fully involved. I really like the ins and outs of the story as the first episode kicks in. And by the end of the first episode, I was on board, yeah, because you really want to know what happened next. There's the odd moment. Again, this looks like, I don't know what James, I'm slightly, you know, I always worry with an ITV show. Hopefully the days are gone when we judge a show on its channel or whatever. But I thought this was kind of big budget and was quite action-packed.
It feels big budget.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, but yes. I was just like, you can tell it's ITV. Like,
really?
It has an... yeah,
really?
I think so.
No,
I just think there's
unfair.
There is a feel to it.
I would love to do a test with James, yes. Right? Whereby we show him some stuff, we don't tell, we do it on an anonymous portal, and then we get to see if he really can tell.
Yeah.
Or if he's just
I feel I'm quite attuned to it because I've been watching Trigger Point all week, but don't get me wrong, I actually like this. I didn't finish season one of Red Eye because I just didn't care, let's be honest with you. It didn't grab me, the first one. This one grabbed me.
Yeah, the West Wing to rewatch.
That's true. This one grabbed me actually a lot more than the first series did. Maybe it's just the setting, like Richard Armitage on the plane, I guess maybe just wasn't doing it. I know, Boydie, you love an in-flight, you love literal in-flight entertainment. But I love this, like the American embassy, someone may or may not be inside, like that interested me. So actually the setup of this I think gripped me much more than the first series did. So I really like this episode.
Well, I think it's because this time around there's very much two sort of lockbox situations running in parallel. So I think that adds to the excitement.
The plane and the embassy.
Yeah.
And there are two different things happening.
For me, this is just totally, I mean, I'm obviously in the big pocket, but I think it's like incredibly tense and thrilling and entertaining. That's the thing. You know, like it feels so entertaining, just what you need in January. And I just whipped through all six episodes and my jaw was dangling with some of the twists.
Your jaw was dangling?
Yeah, that's what happens when you get paid to do it.
That sounds painful.
Jangling, dangling, yeah. That's what happens, yeah, exactly, with my locked jaw situation. But Also, I just love that Martin Compson just really has thrown himself into this role. He's spoken about this. He's having a lot of fun.
He's very good. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why also I like this one. I really like Martin Compson. I think he's incredibly watchable. So while I do still maintain that this has a very ITV sheen to it, and I don't mean that necessarily in a disparaging way,
that's exactly what you mean. And do you know what? I'm making an executive decision here. This is what your entertainment based resolution is, not to be a twat about the channels.
Don't be a channel snob, is that what my resolution is?
Well, you can phrase it as snob, I say twat. Yeah,
well, all I'm saying is, despite that, I liked this, and so I think people should watch it. And also, I don't think you need to have seen the first season, which is lovely, so you can just jump straight into this because it's an original story.
Yeah, that's good. True point. The big question is, what do you watch live on New Year's Day?
What did you watch live on New Year's Day?
I've seen both already. I'm talking to the listeners, like what yes. or us even, what would you recommend? You know, it's the Night Manager versus Red Eye.
If we could go back in time five days to New Year's Eve, what should people have watched?
At the end of the record of this podcast, he still hasn't got that this is the 5th of January. That makes me so happy.
Well, basically, what you're asking, Boydie, what you're actually asking is, what is our pick of the New Year's Day? Because really, that's what we're doing this week, isn't it? It's the pick of the New Year's Day. And my pick of the New Year's Day is The Night Manager.
Yeah, me too, but I would say definitely make time for Red Eye as well.
Yes, Kay needs to earn her Benjamins.
No, but I love the first series, you dick.
Openly.
How dare you call my integrity into question when I was banging on about series one and I didn't host the first series, but as we've just found out, Boyd did. So yeah, anyway, but definitely like the Might Manager.
Listen,
the
James
TV.
Cannot judge us taking the shilling from whoever because he introduced Avatar, the most recent Avatar.
So I did.
There you go.
Exactly.
He's in the pocket of Big Navi.
Yeah.
All three and a half fucking hours of it.
I mean, this is very on brand for us to end the New Year's podcast when we should be getting on like fresh energy to be like brawling and fighting and, you know, yeah, kicking off.
Yeah. It's good times. Good times. Right. So that is our pick of the New Year's Day. Was The Night Manager. What are we going to be doing? I mean, look, it's the 15th of December. I have no idea what we're going to be doing in January at this stage.
Please,
however, all of that said, I will say also that out this week is 1,000 Blows, which drops on Disney Plus on the 9th. I don't know what else is out this week because, frankly, as a month away, Boydie, do you know what's out the week commencing the 5th of January?
I mean, I probably do, really. Yeah, if I actually.
Our boy's going to find out for you. Hold, please, caller. On next week's show, I can tell you right here and right now, Hijack Season 2, that airs next week, as does the aforementioned Star Trek Starfleet Academy on Paramount Plus. And while we're mentioning Hijack, Idris Elba and Jim Field Smith will be on this podcast talking to Boydie about that show, which is exciting.
I've got some things I want to mention that are out. So there's High Potential Season 2B on Disney on the 7th.
Oh, okay. On Wednesday. Yep.
Black Ops returns for Series 2 on BBC One on the 8th, which I'm excited about because we love the first series.
But crucially, not excited enough to put it in the calendar. But that's okay. Carry on.
You know, the calendar's not... James, when will you understand? The calendar is not a thing.
Kay doesn't besmirch her.
No, I don't get my hands dirty with that. I mean, no one looks at it for a start.
If I don't put it in the fucking calendar, then no one does.
Also, to be fair, I tried once and it just wasn't showing up and then I was scared that I'd actually delete the calendar.
I thought you added it to your own personal calendar and not the private calendar, as I recall.
Oh, God. Okay, and the last thing I just want to mention is, I mean, it is a film, but it's on Netflix. People We Meet on Vacation is on Friday the 9th, and that's the one based on Emily Henry's book.
It's literally a film.
I know, but it's on Netflix, and you break that rule all the time. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
But you berate us for breaking that rule. I'm amazed. I don't follow my own rules.
It's a do what she says, not what she does situation.
Anyway,
it's actually quite a big week because there's also Linley, which is the new BBC One crime drama about Inspector Linley, not to be confused with Inspector Linley Mysteries, which is the same character, but years ago. And Patience is back on Channel 4. Remember that crime drama as well? And there's a show, right? All I'll say is there's another show called Waiting for the Out, which looks interesting on BBC One. There's about 6 or 7 new dramas this week. I don't know what the embargo situation. But there's a drama on Paramount Plus called Girl Taken. Have you seen this, Kay?
No.
With Alfie Allen. in it.
And like Alfie Allen.
All I'm going to say to you is, I won't spoil it. I won't review it. It's heavily embargoed. I've watched it. It's probably the biggest challenge for James that I can possibly think of.
Oh my god, he has to watch it.
Well, luckily I don't have to because we've already recorded this week's episode.
Damn it.
Well, it's hardcore, this show.
Yeah. I don't think I wish to be traumatised.
Okay.
Okay. Lastly, boy, did you mention Can You Keep a Secret?
No,
on the 7th.
No,
you should.
Oh, by the way, thank you. Yes, with Dawn French and Mark Heap, who I interviewed for this very podcast, and that will be on next week's pod. Yeah,
you're
demonstrating
welcome.
That you cannot, in fact, keep a secret.
Indeed.
Okay, that is it for this week's show. Oh, good God. The first show of 2026, although and not even the last one we're recording now in 2025.
First,
we hope you enjoyed
first
it. Please,
recording of this week.
Please do leave us some kind of review, preferably a positive one. That would be lovely.
There has to be some kind of reward for this 5 back-to-back podcast records.
I'll give you a medal. I'll find some sort of medal.
Thanks.
And I will present you with it.
What are we doing tomorrow?
Well, we'll do the admin off air. Shall we do that?
Well, I don't know. Why wait?
I mean, boy, do you know what I'm going to say? It's all in the calendar. Anyway, we'll be back next week with Idris Elba, with Jim Field-Smith, and more of this chaos. In the meantime, wishing you a very happy new year. Pilot out.